What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of Polititeen. If you are new here, Polititeen is a podcast that hopes to spark political conversation in our youth by talking about current politics with people that are currently politically active. With that being said, thank you for tuning in to today's episode, and as always, happy listening.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala. I am the co-host of your Polititeen podcast, here today to have conversations and bring perspective on today's most pressing social issues, public policy issues. And I'm very, very excited today to have a very special guest on our podcast. Her name is Fannie Willis. She's a candidate for DA in Fulton County. Fannie, if you'd like to introduce yourself for all of our viewers.
Hi, my name is Fannie Willis. I am running to be the next district attorney of Fulton County. We have an election coming up August the 11th, and we're in early voting now. It's going to be a historic race, as I will be the first female district attorney of the largest county in the state of Georgia.
Well, that's absolutely amazing to hear. For all of our viewers today, I'm going to be alone for our podcast. Damien does have some things to attend to today, so I'm going to be alone for our podcast. But Fannie, I pronounced your name wrong in the beginning. I have a beginning question for you, as we ask all of our guests. What brought you into the political landscape? Because I know you were in the law field for a long, long time. So what made you want to run for DA specifically?
It's interesting you ask that. I have absolutely no interest in being in the political landscape. It's kind of like I had no interest in going to law school, but they told me to be a lawyer, you had to go to law school.
Yeah.
And so fortunately, to get this particular job, it requires that I run for office. And so that requires that I am in the political landscape, as you said. I think that our district attorney's office here in Fulton County is very, very broken. I think as a result of it being very broken, a lot of people in our community have lost confidence in the judicial system. And I don't know, I know that this is a younger audience, but at some point in your life, if not already, God is going to kind of call you to do something, to right some kind of wrong. And when he does, your spirit will feel led to do what he is asking, sometimes even when it's very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And no matter how religious our viewers are, I just want to let them know that, Fannie's absolutely right. When you have that kind of calling, that kind of second purpose for yourself, you have to pursue it. And I'm glad that you are pursuing it, Fannie. Fannie, sorry, I keep mispronouncing your name. So sorry about that.
As long as you tell them that on the ballot, it's going to be F-A-N-I Willis, they can call it whatever they want as long as they select it. So we're good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my first question for you is, I'm reading a book called The New Jim Crow. It talks about how, the prison system right now is very similar to the Jim Crow system, decades ago. So my first question to you is, you say that you're for the expansion of post-indictment diversion programs, which, and correct me if I'm wrong, Fannie, are the programs dedicated towards rehabilitating criminals and preventing them from being convicted or tagged as criminal with a record. Is that right?
Well, so, yeah, actually what I want to do is create pre-indictment diversion programs, and I think that is very, very important. And so what I am saying is, first, let's just kind of talk about the way someone comes to the district attorney's office. When police officers make arrests, they do so on a standard that is called probable cause. It is the absolute lowest standard in the criminal law. It's basically someone said you did it, and that's kind of enough. There's really nothing more that a police officer needs. And the truth is, whether you like it or not, they've actually followed their job to the letter of the law. My problem with the way the current district attorney's office runs is that he actually brags that he has this system called the complaint room, and the vast majority of cases that come to that office are charged within 45 minutes with there being zero investigation.
Wow.
And so I would like to do is, one, foundationally, we are going to create a unit of investigations where I'm putting my most experienced lawyers and my most experienced investigators to evaluate those cases. What you are going to find once that is done is a lot less people are ever going to be indicted. They're going to be formally charged with the crime, which is going to save them, their family, and us as society, taxpayers, paying dollars to have someone incarcerated that has no business being incarcerated in the first place.
Yeah.
But the second thing that me and you both know is some of them people the police arrested, they absolutely are going to done whatever they said they did. But I think that, let's say it's their first offense, let's say it's nonviolent, let's say that there's just a better method. Under my policy, what we will do, even though we have the evidence to possibly indict them and send them through the system, what I would like to do is put them into a diversion program. So there's 15 cities in Fulton County. Let's say that the crime that you committed was in Sandy Springs or in my city, the city of South Fulton. Whatever city you committed that crime in, you'll have to do community service that will give back to the very community that you hurt. And we're also going to look at you as an individual and try to see what else it is that we can put as part of your diversion program that will perhaps further you. If you stole something, maybe what we need to do is send you to a theft prevention course so you can understand how stealing impacts the community. I just had an awesome endorsement by the Carpenters. And what they explained to me is that they're doing all of these buildings, the military bases, everything, scaffolding, and making a ton of money. But they don't have a lot of people coming to their profession because people are more geared now towards computers or towards the formal education like I got, whatever it is, but they're not going to that trade. And there's a huge deficit and a need for people to do that trade and really make a lot of money and have successful lives. And so one thing that I'm going to do through this diversion program is we are going to actually in the first year, 2021, we're going to have a pilot program where we will send 10 people that maybe got arrested for something, shoplifting or something more serious even, but it's not a violent offense, certainly. And we're going to put them in diversion. They're going to be required to do community service. And if they are interested in this job opportunity, they will begin to get training under this profession. Right out the gate, they're going to be making $14 an hour. And as they complete their 160 hours of training, that salary will go up. And so what we'll be able to do is change people who were on their way to jail to giving them the skills they need to have a career while having them do community service to pay back the community, and then ultimately closing their case without an indictment. One of the big powers of the DA is to indict and charge, but I think that we need to do so with compassion and do so in a way that makes common sense for the community. And so my diversion program will impact. And, you know, when the Carpenter said they'll do that, that gave me the idea. I'm about to talk to the trucking industry and some other industries and see how many pilot programs we can get done, because I really believe as a community, we can save a lot of lives. And remember, it's not just going to affect that man or that woman who now has a job and has a trade and has a career, but they'll be able to support their families. And so I literally believe we'll be able to impact thousands of lives in a positive way.
Right, right. And I've never been more passionate about a progressive agenda as I have been about yours, because I'm reading this book called The New Jim Crow, as I said, and I'm seeing that one in three black men have had a felony record as of 2010, meaning that one in three black men are subject to things like disenfranchisement, you know, a loss of education, a loss of more than voting rights, a loss of employment. It's just things like that kind of can take me back to Jim Crow, you know, that people are getting, losing their rights, losing their privileges. I think that, you know, the programs that you're kind of mentioning, diversion programs and these pilot programs, is the way to go forward, you know, not to have these kind of criminal labels placed upon people, but, you know, to advance people's minds, to advance them into better people, and to make sure that people are getting the right help that they need. Because as kids, you know, I've seen my friends go along the wrong path. And these are people that I know ever since I've been a kid. And I feel like these people do have the capacity to improve. They're not people who are set in stone in their older ages. So I think that we have to consider that. And I'm glad that you are. One of the problems that I've seen in my neighbors, in Fulton County and Forsyth County, I do live in Forsyth County and not Fulton, but one of the main problems that I've seen in America, in my neighbors, is that people don't think of the justice system as a system of rehabilitation and think of it as a system of punishment, you know, punishing people who have done offenses, which in a sense it is. But, you know, the bigger thing that I think of is rehab, you know, making people better individuals for the future and making them reintegrate back into society. So what do you think is the role of the justice system per se? Is it, you know, rehab? Is it punishment, or is it a mix of both?
I think it's a mix of both. I think the reality is that when you commit a harm upon society, that you need to pay back society for that harm. But I think that there's a great lesson in that. That is why, like, even in my diversion programs, I say you have to do community service that serves the community you hurt. However, what we don't need to do is throw away a generation or any individual, because as you said, it impacts so much. They're disenfranchised. Let's talk about the fact that when you get a felony, you can never get a student loan. I don't know about you, but not only could I have not afford to go to school, but nor can my children afford to go to school if we don't have the benefit of some student loans. And if you take that ability away, what you have basically said is you're never going to be able to get educated because you're never going to be able to afford it. And so I think that us as prosecutors that are thinking about charges, we have to do way in a way that is compassion. So what you are trying to get is this person rehabilitated so they see that crime is not the right way to go and they can go down a different path while still appreciating that you're a member of society. And if you do harm to us by stealing and making sure that our prices go up at the grocery store, we want you to know that, that we don't want you to do that either in our society. So we want you to maybe get educated by taking a class. We want you to give back community service to us. But we don't want to put a scar on you for the rest of your life. There's just no need for that. That way is not working.
No. No, it's not. And I completely agree. I think that, you know, the goal of the prison system should be to a mix of both, you know, rehab and punishment. But the problem is that after people go to jail, they really have no options, right? We had an ex-con on our podcast. His name's Lair Lawton. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he served in prison for 11 years after, you know, committing, you know, a lot of jewel thefts across America. And he came back as a better man. He wanted to make a difference upon the community, help children going along the same path as him. And that's what he's done. But the fact of the matter was that... Go ahead. Oh, were you talking?
No, ma'am. No, sir.
All right. No worries. I thought you were talking. My fault. But anyways, so Lair Lawton, he was trying to get back in society and reintegrate himself. But the fact of the matter is that because of the restrictions placed upon him, he couldn't really do that. You know, it was very hard for him to get a traditional job, for him to go back into society. So that's the real problem here. We try to, you know, help people become better individuals and reintegrate. But really, there's no option for it because of the amount of restrictions that are placed upon them as felons. I completely agree with you.
Yeah, I absolutely think that what you're saying is correct. That I think another problem is that we think that the only punishment option is prison.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that is the only punishment option. You know, I am a realist. You have people that say, oh, we wish prisons didn't exist at all. Well, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, because of my career and my history, there are a lot of violent people out here and there are people that do harm. I spent 8 years trying homicides only. Much of that time I would have to get up in the middle of the night and, you know, walk over somebody's body at 2 a.m. And so I understand that there is a section of the society that has no care for your life or no care for my life. And for those people, that a prison is appropriate. Yeah. But there are so many more people. I always tell ADAs that I trained, you know, maybe 5%, maybe not even that much of the people that we see, they are actually, you know, violent, evil, don't want to do right. The other 95% made a stupid decision.
Yeah.
And we need to make reasonable decisions on who just made a stupid decision, and we can actually, with some really good job skills, with some life skills and some other things, turn around, and who here is violent. And so we have to be able to prosecute and remove from society those that don't think anything about kicking your mama's door in, tying her up, you know, sexually assaulting her and ultimately killing her, because those people exist. We have to think about putting our resources on dealing with those people and removing them from society. But what about this other 95% that, you know, we're locking them up indefinitely because they had some dope on them, or they stole, and we certainly don't want people stealing, but we can correct that behavior. And so what I am going to bring to this DA's office is really just something that, you know, we talk about, but you really need to know it.
Yeah.
Common sense is not common. And if we bring some common sense to the district attorney's office and charging, we can make a world of difference in so many people's lives.
Yeah. Let's talk about something, Fani. I think that the problem with a lot of today's, you know, cases in DA's offices are that they promote more police officers than they do promote development of children in their education, from a backbone in their childhoods. You know, you've been an advocate, as per your website, of pushing forth, you know, the idea of development of our communities, our kids, so they never get into this system of incarceration in the first place, right? I think a lot of people in the U.S., my neighbors, a lot of people that I've associated with, are saying that the solution to these crises is more police officers. But statistically, more police officers has shown and led to more organized crime, more crime rates in these communities with more police officers. I think the solution is in more education and better communities, a better standard of living, and that's what I think promotes less, you know, less crime. What is your stance on the importance of educating children, developing them at a young age, And the role that plays in just, you know, making crime rates go down. People just don't recognize that. But what is your stance upon that?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think what people don't recognize in urban communities, which, you know, my jurisdiction is vast, but a lot of it is really urban jurisdictions. Atlanta is certainly a urban city, but even Sandy Springs and down below is South Fulton, College Park, East Point. We have real big city problems in all of those cities, and those cities are certainly part of the community in which I live. What we have to do is we have to grab these kids young. What we need to understand is that gangs are already targeting our children at 8 and 9 years old to use them in some capacity in the gang, and that often the family structure is not there. You have very, very young mothers. They may not be equipped with all of the skills that they need, and we are going to really have to begin to work as a community to build them up. Here in Fulton County, we are really, really blessed with a Next Level Boys Academy. The owner of that is Gary Davis. He's somebody I would love for you all to talk to, but what he has done is he has really focused his mind on young African-American teenagers who will soon be men, and he has really grabbed them by the horns, and he has them in every Saturday morning just training classes. A lot of them have criminal records. A lot of them are with him because they are doing it as part of their rehabilitation. I'm very proud to say that when I was a DA, I sent many young 14 and 15 year olds looking at 10-year mandatory sentences. Instead of sending them to prison, I would send them to Next Level Boys Academy because I knew they were going to have some real consequences, have to do some community service, have to answer for their crimes, get a taste of what the prison system is, and understand that they were really making a life-changing choice to go one way or the other. I'm not going to lie to you. Not 100% of that was a success rate, but the percent rate was amazing. And some of those young men right now, I'm happy to say, are college graduates as opposed to being caught up in the justice system. And let me be real honest, part of some of their punishments was, yeah, you can go away to college, but in the summer, you're gonna come here to Fulton County Jail and you're gonna spend 3 months so you can remember that you were looking at 10 years of this and that you make sure that you don't wanna return to this. And many of those young men, like I said, they went ahead, they did those summers, they went into college and they got degrees and they're on a whole different path now. And I guess that's what I mean when I say, no, part of it has to be punitive, but part of it has to be rehabilitative so that we can make sure that you understand this is not where you want to be and you need your life to go in a new direction.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. I think that, you know, doing the right thing does not always result in 100% success rates, these kind of crazy, crazy numbers, but doing the right thing results in a better kind of status for many of these individuals who go to college, like you said, pursue a future after getting indicted. That's the real thing here. It's about doing the right thing and understanding you know, the individual behind every single person who is arrested, is convicted of something. But let's talk about somebody who hasn't, you know, done what you have done in understanding the individual, and that's your opponent. The sitting DA in Fulton County for over 25 years, Paul Howard Jr., you know, his campaign has been, you know, distraught by controversy over his handling of the Rayshard Brooks incident. More specifically, he's under investigation by the GBI. He's had sexual misconduct allegations thrown at him. A bunch of things have just been thrown at him over the past 25 years of his sitting, you know, DA office, where he sat in his office. But I think that, you know, the word that comes to mind when thinking about Paul Howard Jr. is corruption. And that's very controversial. But what is your stance upon, is it corruption what he's doing right now? Can it be corruption? And why are you the better candidate by far?
Well, let me just tell you this. I am very, very saddened by a lot of things that this current district attorney did. I want to talk about for a little while that money that you mentioned. You kind of skirted over it, but I think it is very, very important that a lot of your viewers, they may not have all of the information that you have.
Right.
Paul Howard allegedly set up a nonprofit, PPP, I think is the synonym for it.
Right.
I worked in that office. I have never heard of this nonprofit in my life. But the reality is he said that this nonprofit was going to be to help kids that could be recruited by gangs. In the county in which I serve, that is a huge issue and something where we need resources focused on so that we can redirect lives. What he did was go to the city of Atlanta and ask them to take $250,000, and they took it out of their police budget, and to invest it into this nonprofit that would ultimately redirect youth that could be subject to gangs and subject to gang involvement. Instead of using that $250,000 for the betterment of our community, What he did was put $195,000 in his pocket. Yeah. And there's zero dispute as to whether he did it, because he has boldly stood on the news time and time again and said, well, I started the nonprofit so I could give myself a salary raise. You and I know when you start a nonprofit, it's to do something altruistic. Yeah. But the reality is, I'm just going to say what people don't say. That was going to help African-American children, because that is what is concentrated in my county that are the subjects to gang violence, and probably some Hispanic children as well. For you to take something that we so desperately need in this county and use it for your own good shows that you don't have the heart of the people in mind. What you have is some selfish need of yourself. And I think it's just disgusting. And I think it is absolutely corruption. Also, you mentioned the sexual harassment. Let's be very clear. Taxpayers in Fulton County have already paid out $285,000 in a gender discrimination lawsuit against this man. And right now he sits with three federal lawsuits, one for gender discrimination and two for sexual harassment. We, as the taxpayers who live here, we're the ones that are going to pay that, because he's set in the role of an elected official. And I do think that taxpayers deserve something better with their money than to be paying lawsuits for your sexual prowess among the office. You know, I'm no longer idealistic. This is not an attack of, oh, he cheated on his wife. I really don't care that he cheated on his wife. It's not my business. Maybe they had an arrangement. But what I do care about is employees that report to you, they absolutely should not be subject to your sexual advances. Yeah. And they should not be subject to worrying about advancing, whether you think, you know, they're attractive or whether they will have sex with you, because the allegations are very, very explicit. Yeah. That he was having sex with this young woman in the office. So that is corrupt, and we deserve better than that. He just lacks integrity, and he lacks the honor of sitting in this role. I can assure your viewers that I won't be dating anyone in my office. We're not going to waste resources with that. But certainly, I'm not even going to be involved in setting up a nonprofit. What I will do is work with so many community leaders. I've spoken to so many pastors that are going to provide community service opportunities for us. I plan to speak to so many employers that can offer a job advancement, because all of this is part of the foundation of changing people's lives. And when your focus is on the community and making the community safer, that's what you will get.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's no excuse for Paul Howard Jr., you know, embezzling money, as I'd like to say, for his own purposes, just by creating that nonprofit. Just because he hasn't received the raise that he wanted for so long, he can't really embezzle money. That's not something that anybody should do with any integrity. Integrity is very important to me and to a lot of our viewers I know as young people. And not having that integrity in him is something that I've seen as very, very bad. You know, one of the main things is that he's made these sexual advances, and I read online that he paid these people, gave them promotions, threatened to take away their jobs if they didn't acquiesce to his demands. So it's
and
really,
what's so sad about that, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but no, what please. Is so sad about that, and just really, really bothers me is, you know, people are very judgmental of women that find themselves in those situations. But this is the reality. It is very clear to me that he targeted young ladies that were single moms, that had most of the time multiple children, and they're just trying to make a way for themselves. They often did not have the education that I sit here with, and this was probably the best job that they can get. And so to be in fear of actually losing the way that you take care of your children, I mean, it is a horrible thing and a lot at risk. And so we can sit back and we can judge people and we can say, oh, well, they should have to find another job. But, you know, people have to pay their mortgage, they have to eat. And it would just be a scary situation for a young lady to be in. And we can't think of employees as widgets either. And so I would just ask people to not judge the people that are really the victims. He stood there with a lot of power. And then you mentioned something about him wanting to get a raise. I mean, as a lawyer, you can make millions of dollars. When you sign up to be a public official, you sign up for a salary. The reality is, I had to resign from a judgeship where I served my city as a chief judge. I was being paid six figures for that alone. I also had a thriving law practice here in Atlanta, right, where honestly, I was getting to represent athletes and athletes' baby mamas, and things were going well. Let's just say that, okay? And that's what I talk to you about when I talk to you about when God puts a calling on your life. I've made a decision that the salary that I will be paid, which is a very decent salary, that's going to have to be enough. but that the, when my life is over, if I have been able to impact as many lives as I think I'm going to be able to impact by one, defending victims who have been victimized in the most brutal way, but also in restoring lives of people that were going on the wrong path and sending them on the right path. I mean, my life will have meaning, and money comes and it goes, but changing people's lives, that's forever.
Right. And that's a quote to remember you by, I think, for all of our viewers. You know, money comes and goes, but changing people's lives is forever. That's absolutely inspirational to me, to, I hope, to all of our viewers hearing you right now. One of the things that I wanted to mention to you, speaking about, you know, Paul Howard Jr. and how he's handled situations as DA for the past 25 years, is Rayshard Brooks. You know, amidst today's race incidents and just the racially charged political landscape we're faced with right now, Rayshard Brooks was a very, very disturbing case to hear about for myself. And I know a lot of Americans, a lot of Atlantians, Fulton County residents, I think that, you know, we all saw on social media, a lot of kids were like, I'm glad that the people in this investigation got charged, the people who shot Rayshard Brooks got charged, were involved in that incident got charged. But the fact of the matter is that it was a very flawed investigation, in my perspective. You know, online I saw that he didn't listen to the GBI's kind of advice by waiting for their investigation to finish up, and he made his own decision on that for, I think, political gain. So before I begin my own perspective, because I don't have a very educated perspective, I wanted to hear your perspective about the incident. And did he make a mistake? Was he right in doing what he did? Hey guys, we're going to skip to an advertisement break here with one of our sponsors, Anchor.fm. We'll be back with Fonny Willis here in a couple of minutes. Thank you so much.
I think the problem is, I want your viewers to really unpack what we're talking about now, because it's so important. I am African American. I, like many African Americans in this community, I am fed up with the police mistreating African American, what I think is targeted as young men.
Yeah.
I think that if they are scared to serve in our communities, then they should go find another job. So I want to start with that as a premise. But this is the reality. The way that Paul Howard did things, it was improper. There's no two ways about it. And there's several different things that he did that were improper, and several different ways that we know that it was for political gain. The first way that he did things that were improper is, I absolutely think he should have waited for the GBI to do a complete investigation. I don't think that he has to rely on, and people are kind of misguided. The GBI does not say, hey, our recommendation is that you charge this case or you don't charge this case. That's not the job of them at all. That is the job of the district attorney. What they do is go out and find witnesses and interview witnesses and collect data, and then they give you a report as to everything you found. It is then your job as the district attorney to take any investigation you did and have the benefit of the investigation they did. Ultimately, if you're doing a good job, there are likely going to be witnesses that they talk to you never talk to. So before I would charge, I would not only review their investigation, I would then follow up on those witnesses to make sure that the statements that were taken down were actually accurate, to see if there was even more information that we could get. And when you talk to witnesses, they often lead you to other witnesses. I believe that my dad says don't half do it. If you're going to do it correctly. The way he have did this investigation is going to impact the Rayshard Brooks family getting justice. Wow. There's more he did, though. He also gave these two, what I call them, the shows, this press conference on Rayshard Brooks. I would invite your viewers, because I know they're on the computer anyway, to just Google Georgia State Ethics Rule 3.6 and 3.8. What it is going to tell you is that it is an absolute no-no to speak about anyone that is being charged with a crime in a public forum, because if you do so, you are impacting their right to be able to get a fair trial. And by him doing that, what he has done is made it impossible for that gentleman, the officer, to be able to get a fair trial. So that is actually going to hurt the ability to prosecute the case. It is my guess that they are going to move to recuse that office, meaning remove, which that's all recusal means, that he is going to be removed from even being able to prosecute that case because he has politicized it and done his press conference and disparaged the defendant, which you're not allowed to do as a prosecutor. But the other thing is, it's likely going to be moved out of the jurisdiction of Fulton County, and it'll be moved to Forsyth or some other county. And I think that the taxpayers of Fulton, we should be the ones that get to decide this case. It should be our morals that lead the case. The other thing is, we know that it is political. Paul Howard is notorious for sitting on cases. He has 43 excessive force cases, many that have been sitting on his desk since 2016 and 2017. I don't know if your viewers are familiar with the Jamarion Robinson case, but back in August of 2016, the police entered his house. Yeah. They shot 110 shots at him. His body was struck 59 times, causing 76 holes. Now, I don't know if the police were justified or not, because I haven't done the investigation, but what I do know is Jamarion Robinson's mama been waiting for justice for 4 years. And it does not take you 4 years to do an investigation. And she is one name of many. But when you're in a heated runoff election, and quite frankly, losing, you can charge Rashard Brooks. Paul Howard has made Rashard Brooks' case part of his radio ads that he's running on black radio. He has made it part of his television ads that he's running on cable, where he actually shows the crime that we watched in the Wendy's actually going on. There is no way that that gentleman can get a fair trial. And as a result, we're gonna lose the ability to decide. And it's just disgusting to me that you would interfere with the Brooks family getting justice. You'd interfere with the officers getting justice, all because you want to win an election.
Wow. And it's saddening to hear from you yourself that Rashard Brooks, his death is used as a political pawn. You know, a young black man's death is used as a political pawn. And I don't think there can ever be any vindication, any support for that. I think that it's absolutely, you know, it's just a terrible thing to happen in today's society, especially with today's race riots, racial situation going on in our world. The problem, I think, Fani, sorry, I once again mispronounced it, but the problem I think...
It's okay.
yeah, absolutely. So the problem I think going on right now is that you know this, and Paul Howard Jr. knows what he did is wrong, and that it was like not legally, you know, vindicated or supported. But a lot of our viewers and American citizens, Fulton County residents, don't really know the truth behind the matter. So I wanted to ask you this for a long time. I wasn't familiar with any of these cases before last week doing research on you. Polavi actually got me into contact with you, our old guest. She's one of our best guests, a political strategist for the Democratic Party. She got me into contact with you and was like, you know, Varun and Damien, the DA's office is one of the most important offices in Georgia, and you guys should definitely do research into that. So we did some research and got into contact with you. But a lot of our viewers don't have that same amount of education and information about the crisis. So what can we do as people to increase the amount of awareness that we have about issues like these, your election, your campaign, and just, you know, where justice needs to be served?
Well, I'm glad we're getting here, because I think that the district attorney's office is literally one of the most important seats that one can elect. I think it's more important than Congress, even your president. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you why. I don't just say that because I'm running for this particular seat. I say it because, as a citizen, what I know is that in anybody's 10-year span of their life, they are going to be impacted by crime or by a district attorney's office in some way. And let me tell you how. In that time, unfortunately, if you live in a city, you are probably going to be the victim of, like, either your car stole or someone breaking into your house or someone you know and love being charged with a crime. And so you want a district attorney that, when the worst happens in your life and when crime happens to you, it is the worst. Someone that is going to really investigate that case and make sure that you get justice. But you also want, when your friend, because sometimes it doesn't impact you, it impacts your friend. When you know your friend did something stupid, got in a car with some folks they shouldn't have got into, and those people went and did something, and now they're being charged with a crime. You want someone that's going to look at the facts of those cases and make a decision based on the facts and the law, but also that's going to show common sense and compassion. And in a 10-year span, unfortunately, we all are either going to be a witness to a crime ourselves, or someone we love is going to be a witness to some crime, and it's going to impact them emotionally more so than they even know. We're going to know someone that has been the victim of a crime, and that could be everything from they work in a store and it was shoplifted or robbed, to their door was kicked in, till someone they know or love was killed or raped, or someone might reveal to you that in their childhood that they were actually molested. And you're going to have to deal with those issues. Or you're going to know someone ultimately that's charged, and you're going to want compassion for them. And so because we know that our lives are going to be touched by this office in some way, it is very important. Fulton County is even more important than other counties. And I say that for this reason. It is the biggest office in the state of Georgia. Yeah. But it, if it is done correctly, will impact policies from Washington, D.C. to Miami. And in it impacting policies, we can have policies like the current DA has, which is he brags about charging cases in 45 minutes. Or yeah. we can have policies that says we're not going to charge everybody. We're going to try to give people second chances. We're going to put them into diversion programs. We're going to try to deal with their drug issues. And hey, for these violent offenders, we're coming for them. You know, and so you got to think as a society, what do you want the policies to be? What do you want the feeling of this office to be? Because it is going to be the teacher of all of the rest of the state. I'm going to tell you something else that is particularly important about the DA's office in Fulton County. It, along with the Attorney General's office, is the only one that can create, can investigate issues with elections. We know that we have a governor's elections coming up in 2 years. Right. And we know that there are lots of suspicious things that went on with the last governor's race. The only people, because of where Fulton County sits, that have the right to start grand juries to investigate whether those things went correctly or incorrectly are the DA that sit in Fulton and Christopher Carr, the Attorney General's office. The district attorney has been sitting here for 24 years, and with all the problems that my county is notorious for having yeah. with voter issues, there has never been a grand jury in investigating voter issues. Yeah. And, you know, we just lost a legend this week, John Lewis, who did so much. And one of the things that he ensured was that we all had a right to vote. And so it's important that we have someone strong sitting in this seat.
Yeah. And absolutely. Rest in peace to John Lewis. But one of his main policies and main things that he talked about was protecting the right to vote, protecting the right to enfranchisement. You know, we have to understand that, you know, you're right. Absolutely. The DA office has a very big role, an integral role in the elections that we have going on. One of the main things that I've seen is the mail-in ballots have been called by some as, you know, treacherous, deceiving, not the best way of getting votes in. There have been extreme delays in our election process, mail-in ballots. So, I mean, this is kind of an off-key question for you, but I think that we should invest more money into elections to make sure we count these ballots better. We have more poll workers. We have just a better election process, especially with the coronavirus. But beyond that, just along the scale of the U.S., elections have been plagued by less money being offered towards them. So do you think we have enough money put into elections on a local and national level, or should we have more money and taxpayer money put into elections?
Look at how idiotic what the state of Georgia has done. So when we had the first election back on June the 9th, they decided that the coronavirus was bad enough where we were going to mail out an absentee ballot right. request form for every registered voter here. But now here we sit at the August election, and guess what has happened? The numbers of the coronavirus have spiked. And yeah. we made a decision in the state of Georgia that we are not going to send ballot, you know, the request for ballot forms to anyone except the very, very oldest of our population. Not only that, here in Fulton County, what happened was for registered Democrats, the Secretary of State actually mailed out 688 ballots that were nonpartisan, which would disenfranchise them from being able to vote for their sheriff, which is somebody you all, I have a candidate you all might want to talk to, and that they would not be able to vote for their district attorney. And the next problem that happened in Fulton County is the ones they did mail ballots out to, they failed to put the address where the ballot was to go back to. And so when I say that problems in Fulton County are real around elections, and at some point, you got to say, okay, wait a minute. Is this incompetence or is this intentionally trying to disenfranchise yeah. people? Especially when you look at, there seems to be a pattern of these kind of issues going to African-American voters on the south side of our county. At some point, it's not just a mistake or a coincidence. At some time, we have to say, okay, why are these voters not as important? I mean, at the June 9th, and I don't know how much you followed it, it was just a disaster. They had waiting in line for 6 and 7 hours, polls not opening to noon. In Gwinnett, they had machines that were actually delivered the day of the election. Like, you all knew for months. In fact, the election was delayed for you all to get your act in order. And it's just like the election process is not important to them. And so voting is so important, because in 2 years we can choose a Secretary of State that maybe takes the rights of all citizens as being important. But it's especially important, again, coming back to these DA's race, because I will be one of two people in the entire state that has the power to deal with it.
Right, right. And right now it comes down to a question of, do you care? Or, you know, do you just not care, or do you care enough to disenfranchise voters for political gain? That's the real question we have going on right now. It's disenfranchisement, or it's just complete ignorance. Either one, I think it's terrible. You know, we have to tell people that, you know, sign up to be a poll worker. Go vote. You know, be a part of your nation's political process in any way possible and make these things possible. But it always starts from the ground up. You know, voting and being a poll worker is the two things that Polititeam, we at Polititeam, myself and Damien, try to promote every single day on our Twitter, our social media platforms, because we want our elections to go out fairly and smoothly. And that's one of the main things that we have to keep in mind going forward. But you mentioned a very good point. And I want to say it because it relates back to me as a student and a lot of our viewers as students, as teens. You know, I had schools closed down March 16th. I remember the day, you know, I had no idea what was going on, and I was like, why are schools closed down? I have a test tomorrow. And that was, you know, the start of the coronavirus. There was really no cases going on in our county, our state. And now we have, you know, over 4 million cases in our nation. The cases are rising by the day, by the minute, and we're having schools reopen. My school's reopening in 2 weeks. I'm going back to school. I'm going to be in physical instruction. So, I mean, is that, and this is obviously not in your jurisdiction to make, I don't know, make a decision about, but is that reasonable to have people going back to school so early, even when the coronavirus is even bigger, much bigger than it was back in March?
I have very, very strong concerns about that. And I think it's going to have to be decisions that families individually make. Like, I don't know the way your household is set up, but recently my household, my 78-year-old African-American father, because he is getting older, he has come to live with us. And so whereas my 21 and 22-year-old daughter, I'm not really worried about them. I think they might get sick. I think that they'll probably be able to conquer it. But I am extremely worried about my father. And so if I was sitting in so many households where we have multi-generation parents, grandparents, or just older parents, or people that aren't older at all, but they suffer from asthma or diabetes or cancer, if I was a parent, this would be an extremely difficult decision for me. Maybe if everyone in your family is really, really healthy and you all are only going to be around each other, you think that your household will be able to conquer it. Maybe, you know, it's no big deal. Your kid goes to school. But there are going to be so many other families that by a child going to school, you're going to put them in risk. I also have to think not just about the children, but what about the teachers? We don't know who they have in their life that they love. Maybe they have a child that is compromised. Maybe they have a spouse that's compromised. Maybe their adult parents have come to live with them and they've gotten into their last years of life. And so I think that we as individual families are going to have to make decisions for ourselves, because clearly to keep ourselves safe, that's where we have gotten as a society. It's going to have to be an individual choice. And what I would say is I don't think we should judge anyone. Because you don't know that maybe that mother has to send her children to school because, one, that's the way her children get fed. Two, it's the only way she can work. And in their household, it's only her as the mother and them as the children. And so she's not putting anyone at risk. But that's going to be a different scenario for every family.
Yeah, absolutely. The main problem I'm seeing is in my school system, they're not even mandating masks. Like, you can come to school without a mask on and be okay with that. And the reason behind that is apparently...
Really, no, that's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous, absolutely. And we're going to have our superintendent on in 2 weeks to discuss that, our very own superintendent who does admit those policies, Dr. Jeff Bearden. But he says that, you know, for people with asthma, they can't really, you know, breathe without a mask on. But the problem that I'm seeing is that these people with asthma, if they come to school and contract the coronavirus, they're going to be much, much, much worse off with the virus than if they were having trouble breathing with a mask on. That's the real issue. Go ahead.
Yeah, I almost think if you're suffering with something like asthma that, you know, you don't even go to school.
No.
My child and my child has asthma. That would just be a non-starter for me.
Yeah, you should not go to school if you have asthma. I think definitely that's one of the main policies that I think should be upheld. Masks are the only way we can kind of curb the virus. And the fact that people are going to come to school, my friends are saying, you know, Varun, I'm going to come to school without a mask on. It's too uncomfortable. You know, in society, the fact that a mask is even a choice is very, very confusing to me, because, you know, in places like Japan, mask culture has been there for centuries, for decades, and people just, they look at you weird if you don't wear a mask on. In the U.S., They cheer you on if you don't have a mask on. Our own president doesn't have a mask on when he goes out to public gatherings, which, again, is very confusing that he doesn't have the virus. But, you know, the fact that a mask is a choice is just very, very, very confusing to me for me to, you know, reckon with, to think of as reasonable.
Well, what's confusing to me is that we politicize the issue of a mask. I don't care if you're a Republican, Democrat, independent, libertarian, or you don't vote or participate in the process at all, and you don't classify yourself as anything. The reality is that we each need to not only be safe ourselves, but we need to make sure that the people around us are safe. And so I don't think it's a political issue. I refuse to even discuss it as a political issue. To me, it is a public health issue. And I mean, I have my daughter's very best friend at Florida A&M University is 20 years old, but she has severe asthma. And so the issue of having a mask on when she is in our home, it's a non-starter. We're going to wear a mask around her because we want to make sure she stays safe. My dad, who is 78 years old, I mean, since this virus has started, I mean, he goes out maybe once a month and we all mask up. And, you know, even now when I want to talk to my father, I typically call him because I don't want to risk the fact that I have been out in society to get my father sick. I don't know what that has to do with politics. I love my daddy and I want to make sure he as long as possible. And I assume that you love the people that are in your life and you want to make sure they stay here as long, and so I am respecting your ability to keep your folks safe, and I would expect you to respect the ability to keep my people safe.
Right, and you're absolutely right about compassion. You know, I've always thought of the Republican Party, the GOP, as a party of compassion and not facts, you know, very, very emotionally based in their arguments. But right now I don't see that, because if you're based upon your passion and your emotion, you won't be putting your loved ones at risk. You won't be putting the American people at risk. That's the issue that I'm seeing right now. The party itself is just shifting so far away from its ideals as the GOP of the past. But, you know, we're up to 45 minutes in our podcast. I can't understand that because I'm always very dumbfounded by how long we've gone in the podcast, because I think it's been 10 minutes. That's how I think of it. But as our last question to you, Fani, we always ask our guests this last question. Is there any quote, phrase, or just saying from yourself, anything you'd like to say for young Americans watching our podcast to sum up your views, your opinions, and something you'd like our viewers to leave with?
What I would say for them is I hope a message that they will take for their own lives. And it is one of the guiding principles for my life. And it is, to whom much is given, much is required. And so if you're sitting listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I'm healthy, I have food to eat, I have even one other human being in my life that cares that I exist, and you are blessed beyond measure. And so your life needs to have meaning, and that meaning should not be attributed to any kind of material wealth. It should be into your legacy and what you leave. And so I would just ask each of them, while they are on this journey, that they make sure that they leave their footprint, and their footprint does something to help another human being. And that's the way I'm trying to lead my life. And I would ask for their support, because we are going to change lives, but I cannot do it without their votes and the votes of their family and friends. And if you only know one other person that lives in Fulton County, I'm asking you to pick up the phone, to call them, to text them, to do whatever is necessary, and tell them to get to these polls to vote, and send you back a picture message of their sticker, because we holding folks accountable.
Right.
And I just appreciate you all for having me on here and taking the time so that we could do this interview today.
Well, absolutely. You know, I miss Damien today, but it was a great, great, great interview. For all of our listeners, vote for Fani Willis for DA in Fulton County in this, I think, runoff election, August 11th, I believe, if I'm not wrong.
Yes, that is absolutely correct. Thank you so much. And early voting ends on August the 7th. And tomorrow, Saturday, is the only weekend day. So let's get to the polls.
All right, guys. Get to the polls. Have a great day. I will see you next time on Polititeam.
Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for watching today's episode of the Polititeam podcast. As always, we appreciate and thank you for your support over these past couple of weeks as we've grown as a podcast and as a duo between myself and Damien. And please follow us on Twitter at Polititeam Show. And always, as always, make sure to follow us on Instagram at Polititeam Show, and to connect with us via email at polititeampodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to check out our newly hosted website at polititeampodcast.com. And lastly, please consider becoming a sponsor, a donor. supporter for our campaign on Patreon. You can get a link to that through our website at www.politateampodcast.com. And through becoming a sponsor, you can get some amazing exclusive perks, such as a way to contact us for questions, suggestions, becoming part of our exclusive community where you can kind of talk about your political viewpoints and ask questions of our guests as they come on. You know, live streams of us talking, and even posters, stickers to rep Politateen. So as always, have a great rest of your day, and thank you so much for your support over these past couple of weeks. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much.